He's the criminal's worst nightmare. A cop who enjoys the danger.
No guns, no jiu-jitsu, just bring him down.
Do you really want to jump?
Well, then that's fine with me. Come on.
Wait, what do you mean? Wait a minute. What the...
He was ready to retire. Now, he's gonna wish he had.
Raj, meet your new partner.
New partner?
Oh, too old for this.
Don't kill anybody.
Suppose we better register you as a lethal weapon.
You ever met anybody you didn't kill?
Well, I haven't killed you yet.
Hello, everyone.
Hi. Welcome to Worst Cops Ever, the show about worst cops and the people who love them. Is that it?
No, that's not
it
at all.
Is that the idea? Damn.
No, this is Worst Cops Ever. It's a special Patreon-produced mini-series about the Lethal Weapon series, you guys.
Yeah, guys, produced by our pal, and some would say family. And Patreon subscriber John Ryman, everybody.
Yeah,
everybody clap.
Yep.
Are you clapping, Tom?
Yeah, can't you hear me, bro?
It's working.
Yeah, it's totally working. So yeah.
Yeah.
This is going to be a show. You could almost look at it as a sister show of Fox Mulder as a Maniac, because what we're going to do is we're going to watch all four Lethal Weapon movies. So this
all
is going to be a four-episode miniseries. And in each episode, we're going to look at each movie and examine exactly how terrible Riggs and Murtaugh are at being police officers.
Right. And I've only watched the first one recently, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I bet they're pretty terrible.
Yeah, because the first film is actually the most grounded.
Yes.
It spirals way out of control after that.
Yes. The first film is the most grounded and is already out of control.
Still completely insane.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, I don't know, this is going to be a fun one.
Yeah. If you guys haven't seen Lethal Weapon, I mean, I guess it's possible. It's an older film and it's kind of dated.
I mean, at this point, there's a pretty big elephant in the room with the Lethal Weapon series.
Yeah.
Because we all know that Danny Glover's a monster.
Right.
Complete
unrepentant monster.
Yeah. So it is. I found this kind of hard to watch.
I honestly didn't. And I'm not sure why. I think because I was going into it with this is the first script that Shane Black sold.
Yeah. The Shane Black aspect is great.
Yeah.
I can't really downplay Mel Gibson, but I think one weird thing is that since that stuff came out about him, so many other celebrities have turned out to be so much worse that in a way you're watching this and it's like, oh, my outrage is quaint. Like, I'm not.
Well, yeah, because you're watching Mel Gibson, you're like, well, I guess compared to like Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, exactly. Like I don't think he's assaulted anyone, at least.
Well, not physically.
Okay. Yes. Which again, the bar is very low.
Yeah, the bar is very low.
I'm lowing, but it's still playing a man with mental instability. Knowing that Mel Gibson is a man who is very unstable, it's a hard watch, especially if you don't have any nostalgic connection to these movies.
I don't know. I definitely recognize that, and that's the elephant in the room. I guess because I just don't ever think about Mel Gibson.
I don't think most people do until he pops up to do the, what did he do? The stone cutter and the professor, or like,
oh, the professor,
the magician. And
some damn movie where he's wearing a crazy ass beard.
Yeah. Whenever he shows up now, it's just like, man, we're all set with you. But that doesn't change the fact that he made a bunch of movies in the past.
Well, yeah, and that was what the point I was getting to is I guess it's because I just don't think about him anymore that, like, when I go back and watch Lethal Weapon, it's just I'm just watching the movie for the movie, and I can sort of forget about who Mel is.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's probably different for everybody.
Yeah.
Because with me, it's there's one movie that I'm like, I can't, that he can't ruin it for me.
Maverick.
Maverick. Yeah, he just can't ruin Maverick for me.
Which is funny weird. Because Maverick depends almost entirely on Mel Gibson's charm.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a conceit about Mel Gibson, which is that he was good at what he did.
Yeah.
He was in a lot of iconic movies. He was a monster, it turns out.
He was, you gotta, or at least you youngins gotta understand, Mel Gibson was like the Chris Evans of the 90s. He was,
yes,
like
imagine Chris Evans loved. Doing all the things Mel Gibson did. That's yeah. what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
So it is a very strange experience watching these movies.
Yeah, I think
how all the dust have settled.
I mean,
but yeah, the fact that Shane Black and Richard Donner are at the helm here.
Yeah.
And really
Jeffrey
helped.
And Jeffrey Boehm. Jeffrey Boehm, who, if you guys have been following the Gainfully Unemployed Network, he was the creator of Briscoe County Jr., and he also wrote The Last Crusade. he did an uncredited punch-up rewrite of this screenplay, and I believe he wrote all of the remaining Lethal Weapons.
Okay. Yeah, because I was going to say, I think there'll be a quality drop-off after this, but maybe not.
Well... definitely towards the last half of the series. Anyway,
sure.
We talked about the Mel stuff. That's what it is. So I guess we're going to start each episode with just a brief plot rundown of the film in question.
Yes.
Yeah. So Lethal Weapon, 1986, I think, or 87.
I don't know. Who could say?
God damn it!
I can't appraise this movie. Whether or not it's 86 or 87 when I look at it.
Yeah, it's tough. It's one of those it's one of those 80s movies that's just, it's 87. Okay.
87.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those 80s movies that hasn't gotten much love in terms of restoration or transfer, so it's pretty grainy.
Right.
Like,
because again, I don't think anybody's going back to revisit this anymore.
I mean, this is an extremely popular film series for a long time.
I was going to say it's a kind of a classic, but I think now modern audiences, no one's saying to their kids like, "Hey, go rewatch Lethal Weapon." I think this is getting lost. This film, this series.
So anyway, Lethal Weapon, 1987. It's about a police sergeant named Roger Murtaugh, who is just having his 50th birthday, and he's going to retire soon.
He's having a bathtub birthday party.
Right, his family
totally
comes
normal
into
thing
the
to happen.
Bathroom to sing him happy birthday with his dick just floating in the tub.
Yeah, guys, if your family hasn't come into the bathroom to sing you happy birthday before, you're just not an American.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. He doesn't even
totally
attempt to
normal.
Cover up.
Nope. No attempt.
Teenage daughter leans over and gives him a kiss. He's just sitting
it
there.
Is, yeah,
he's,
it is.
He's sitting there like a Roman emperor.
The movie opens with a half-naked lady jumping to her death.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And then it immediately goes to Danny Glover in the bath. And it was like, I was one of those things where I was like, I mean, I remember this movie fairly well. I did not remember that the first introduction of him is bathtub birthday party.
Yeah.
That's a weird choice.
After Woody Harrelson's girlfriend from Cheers jumps to her death.
Yeah.
To a Christmas song.
Yeah. Which is, it's a good
because
sequence.
Because this is Shane Black as shit, you guys. It's Christmas time. Yeah, it's a great sequence.
Oh, yeah, because it's Richard Donner directing. But yeah, it's, yeah, Christmas, Shane Black, of course.
Mm-hmm. You
Man
know,
hates Christmas.
You know, Leonard Nimoy Christmas. Was their original pick to direct this film. Can you imagine that?
What else did he direct? Some Star Treks?
He did a couple Star Treks. He turned
Three Men and a Baby? Didn't he
yes,
do Three Men
he
and
turned
a baby?
It down because he was doing Three Men and a Baby at the time.
I think that was a good idea.
Probably.
For everybody. I mean, obviously for his career, he might have been like, damn, that would have been fun. But I think everybody came out of that all right.
Yeah. So yeah, Roger Murtaugh, played by Danny Glover, turning 50. He's going to retire from the force. He doesn't actually say his classic line until the very, very end of the film.
Yeah.
And it's not I'm getting too old for this shit. He just says, I'm getting too old for this.
Well, this reminds me of like when you watch the first Terminator, they didn't know I'll be back would be a big deal.
Yeah.
So he just sort of says it in a scene. And so then once you get to the sequel, then he's like, oh, I'll be back. Like he's all, that's the exact impression of it.
Hold for applause. Yeah, that's it. Man, it's a spot on Arnold.
I'll be back. Yeah.
I'll be back. I'll be right back.
I'll be right back.
I will be back momentarily. My classic Arnold line.
Yeah. So, like, you get what I'm saying. And yeah. So in this movie, they didn't know I'm getting too old for this shit would be a big deal.
Doesn't even say I'm getting too old for this shit.
He says I'm getting too old for this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyhow. So then we see Martin Riggs, who lives in a trailer on the beach, wakes up drunk.
Yeah, again, this is just Mel Gibson. He wakes up with a cigarette in his mouth. Which I don't think is possible. Because the cigarette's like, he must have woken up like 5 minutes earlier.
Right, and passed back out. Because he wakes up, he stumbles to his fridge and gets another beer.
It reminds me of PCU when he finds him in bed and he's got the cigarette and he's snoring. And every snore, he takes a drag of the cigarette. It's a solid gag.
Yeah. And that's our introduction to Martin Riggs.
Yeah, I'm gonna just throw this out there. And I know this is besides the point. I've always wanted to live like Martin Riggs.
Just on a trailer on the beach? Hell yeah.
Yeah, and just like, just not giving a fuck.
He never moves out of that trailer.
Yeah, with a
dog. In all four films.
Yeah, like he's got, I know.
He remains in a trailer on the beach.
I know he goes to bed every night putting a gun in his mouth, yeah. But taking that part away, like mm-hmm. I think he's got it going pretty good.
Right, taking out the suicidal tendencies, which we're about to address, and the rampaging alcoholism. Living like Martin Riggs seems right. Pretty cool.
I could even deal with the rampaging alcoholism if I had like a steady cop job like he does. It's just like, you know, it's really the dead wife that's holding them back.
Oh, yeah. So Riggs's wife, we find out, was killed in a car accident a few years prior, and he's been on the edge ever since.
Yes, he should have already been fired.
Right.
This movie starts from the premise that this man hasn't been fired, and that's how they trick you. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, I don't think this man would have,
for
been a cop anymore.
3 years?
Yeah.
All right, so this is, I mean, without getting, just to go over the plot, Martin Riggs is a former Green Beret from Vietnam. He's a special forces guy. He is on the ragged edge after his wife's death. And because he's just, because he's brutalizing too many suspects, they pair him up with, they move him from, department he was in. I think he was in narcotics, right? Because he's on a drug bust when we first meet him.
Yeah, I think so.
They move him, they pair him up with Murtaugh because Murtaugh's on his way out and they just want somebody to watch Riggs. I don't know. They transfer Riggs to Murtaugh in homicide, presumably so he won't assault more people. And sure. Like potentially try to get himself killed in the line of duty, because I guess the thinking is there's less armed suspects involved when you're investigating homicides because people are generally already dead.
Right. I guess that's the thinking. It's flawed thinking.
Right. Yeah. We have a scene that we will talk about in great detail later. Where
it's already.
Oh, go ahead.
It's already pretty dark because it's cops protecting other cops.
It's not only that, it's like we have a brief scene where she becomes like a comedic sidekick, like a butt of jokes in the later films, but it's like the police psychologist is like pleading with the police captain to take Riggs off the street, and that Riggs is in real danger. He is definitely suicidal and we can't have him on the street. He's a danger to himself and to others. And the captain basically tells her to fuck off and then walks into the bathroom and shuts the bathroom door on her face.
Enough of that psychology shit.
And that is the most dignity that this character gets treated with in the entire series. Right.
He is going to shoot an unarmed kid at any moment.
Yes.
It is a scandal waiting to happen. This is a dark look.
Something that
the police.
There are a few things that happen in this film that would undeniably be scandals in 2019.
Oh yeah, Oh, I think in 1987.
Probably in 1987, yeah. It's hard to get past that. So anyway, Murtaugh gets contacted by his old war buddy, Michael Hunsaker, who is played by Tom Atkins.
Yeah.
Tom fucking Atkins. Halloween 3's legendary leading man, yep. Tom Atkins.
Fucking sexy, dreamy Tom Atkins.
The sex vortex.
The fucker of 20-year-olds, Tom yes. Atkins. God, everybody see Halloween 3.
I saw like a meme the other day that was just a picture of Tom Atkins from Halloween 3, and it was like every time you look at a picture of Tom Atkins, he fucks your mom or something like that. And I was like, yeah, that's probably accurate.
Yeah. Fucking Tom Boozy.
Just
20-year-old fucking Tom Atkins.
Like borderline overweight. Like you wouldn't call him fat, but like
but
he's just
he's like
Uncle Bod.
Yeah, and all the ladies love him.
And the ladies all can't the ladies resist love Tom him. Atkins.
Yeah. He's at least in Halloween 3, he's like the result of a genie wish. Because, like, he's clearly, like, all the women are into him, and there's just no reason
right,
to
it's
be.
Like you're looking at it, you're like, him?
Yeah. Really?
This
like,
guy?
He's not the worst looking dude, I guess. But he's like 30 years older than all of you.
Right.
And you just can't wait to get on that hog. It's real weird.
He's pure uncle material. Like yeah. He's just, yeah. He looks like an assistant manager at a hardware store.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
Tom Atkins plays Hunsaker, who's Murtaugh's old Vietnam War buddy. And it's his daughter that jumped in the beginning. And they find out that his daughter was involved in a drug ring, and she was apparently either going to go public or she had seen some things she was not supposed to see, because they find out that even if she hadn't jumped, she would have died because the drug she had taken had been tainted with bleach, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
So she was poisoned before she jumped.
Yeah.
So it's a murder. And they find out that this whole thing runs super deep. It's this old Vietnam general named General Philip McAllister. And he runs this like special forces group called Shadow Company. And they, in the war, they crushed some base that was a huge heroin distributor. And then they just decided to take it over. And now they're just big, they're ex-military heroin dealers. This movie's heavily tied to Vietnam.
Yes.
Because it's the 80s. Everything in the 80s was tied to Vietnam, you guys.
Well, yeah. We were still... Yeah.
Yeah. Like, every action movie hero in the 80s was a Vietnam veteran.
It makes sense. It makes sense. I feel
yeah.
like we do that now with the Iraq War.
We 100% do, yeah. Like, with the Lethal Weapon TV show.
The timing. Yeah, like, the timing is just fits.
They now. Just... They updated Riggs to be an Iraq War veteran.
Right.
That's, at least we can count on that. At least we can count on like every two decades there will be a two decades long war that we can have our action heroes be veterans of.
That's true. At least there's that. It makes it all worth it.
So Riggs and Murtaugh discover this conspiracy. They destroy Shadow Company and they kill everyone involved. Case closed, I guess.
And yeah, Gary Busey's in there somewhere.
Gary Busey is, believe it or not, this is the first movie in which Gary Busey played a bad guy.
Wow.
Yep.
And he's not playing normal Gary Busey.
Well, this is pre-motorcycle accident Gary Busey.
Oh, okay.
Our listeners may not know this, but the Gary Busey that you may know, like the Nicolas Cage sort of adjacent, just pure crazy Gary Busey, he wasn't like that initially. Like, he was an Academy Award nominated actor, and then he was in a very terrible motorcycle accident in either the late 80s or the early 90s, where he was, like, dead for a minute, and he has never been the same since.
He saw God, and God was like, I want you to be weirder, man.
He didn't quit a film, but, like, he was in a movie where he gave very heated notes on a scene that depicted heaven because he was like, no, I've seen heaven and it doesn't look like this.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Mm, yeah. So I mean, I laughed when I delivered that information, but I really shouldn't have. Anyway, this is a Gary Busey that you are not used to seeing.
No, yeah. I mean, I would argue that he is still like Gary Busey.
He is.
Like, he didn't completely change as a person between that. I mean, Point Break is post-accident, I assume?
Yes.
So those are good comparisons. Because I honestly think that Gary Busey, over the years, played to the type after
a while.
Yeah,
I'm sure he leaned into it. Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's absolutely leaned into it. Mm-hmm. And so I think Point Break in this gives you a good contrast.
Yeah.
Because he's not a maniac in Point Break. He's eccentric.
Yeah, he's like an eccentric, funny character. And in this movie, yeah. he's like a scary enforcer. And he's like,
yeah, it's
in
a weird
shape. He's doing karate with Gibson.
Yeah. It's a weird reminder, because I think he's still capable of this. Like, he plays a very serious, scary man.
Yeah.
And it's a very different Gary Busey than you're used to.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And at the end of the film, Riggs gives Murtaugh the hollow point bullet as a Christmas present that he had saved for his own suicide as a gesture to be like, I'm not suicidal anymore, because now I have friends. He basically gets adopted by Murtaugh's family, so now he has a reason to live. Like, he has a friend and a family.
Right.
And that's
they take him in like a dog. Yeah.
They do bring him in like a dog. Yeah.
Kids are like, can we keep him? Man, Murdoch's daughter is so into him.
Yeah.
Too into him.
Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. 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 Rianne is way too into Riggs. And he encourages it a little bit.
I guess a little bit. It's not creepy.
It's not in a creepy way, but
it's not creepy. It's more they treat her like she is in fact a child. So it's like a crush.
She's making moon calfing faces at him, and he's
right,
like, and he's obviously noticing it.
It's weird. I don't know if this came out in the performance or the writing. But at no point was I like, come on, Mel, creepy, which is a hell of a thing
it's
to
a
not
win.
Say.
Big win.
Yeah,
for
it's a big win for Mel. I was never like, this is don't do this.
Yeah.
Like, it was always kind of quaint, which it's a really hard line to walk. And maybe other people have a different opinion on this if they've watched it recently.
Yeah, I watched it with Marina, and she objected a little bit just because he doesn't completely shut it down.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
Not that he's in it's he never does any like we said, he never does anything creepy, but he's just like he's kind of like encouraging her to
right, he's like
rebel
to
against
Murtaugh
a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
it's weird.
Yeah.
Well, it's not as weird as it could have been.
No.
The weirder part, I mean, the stuff that I was like, oh, come on, is mostly the rampant police brutality and the cover-ups.
The rampant police brutality and cover-ups, the casual homophobic and racial slurs. Riggs drops.
Yeah. That's not good. These
some
are bad
them,
cops.
Some of them you don't catch unless you have the captions on.
Really?
It's like, what? So that's the plot summary. I think it's time to get into to sink our teeth into the meat haunch of this episode.
Well, yes, I agree.
Unless you have any other major plot
point
we should add.
No, I want to get right into the first.
Let's get
Riggs
in. Yeah, let's get into worst cops ever, Riggs and Murtaugh.
He busts some drug dealers Riggs does by doing Three Stooges moves on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point he points a gun at one of them and with a gravelly voice says, I want to stick your fucking face in the clouds, which is the scariest thing to ever hear from a cop with his gun drawn.
That's later in the scene.
Really?
That's after the guy takes him hostage.
Okay, I don't care when. That's still the scariest.
Right,
most
yeah, it's
crazy,
it's
crazy fucking thing.
It is a haunting thing for somebody to tell you.
Yeah.
When they're pointing a gun to your head.
Yeah, because I don't even know what that means completely. Like it's like poetic
I assume he is going to shoot him in the head with such force that his face goes in flies into the clouds.
Or he's turning him into an angel. No matter what, it's a dark thing. It means murder.
You said the word bust.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
He does not bust these drug dealers. We see Riggs the morning of this drug sting. He wakes up drunk, gets even more drunk, and then goes to his undercover drug bust at a Christmas tree lot where he kills three people.
Yes.
He does not bust them. There are four drug dealers. He kills three of them.
Right. And I feel like he barely lets the other one live.
The other guy barely lives. The other guy grabs him and takes him hostage, and the other officers show up, which, man, where were they when the shooting started? And he's just screaming at them to shoot him, intermittently screaming at them, shoot this piece of shit, and then leaning over to the guy who has him hostage and saying, shoot me, man, shoot me, fucking shoot me.
Right.
Like, he is... This man has no business being on the streets as a police officer.
This should have been the incident that causes him to be let go.
The way that it's treated in the scene after with the psychologist talking to the police captain, this is just the most recent of many similar incidents.
Yeah, I have a theory.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where I think talking to Murdoch, there's
a random Murtaugh.
Whatevs.
You keep calling him Murtaugh.
Whatevs. There's a cop talking to him and admits that he cried in bed the other night.
Yeah, this guy's a funny character. The guy talking about being an 80s man.
Yeah. So I theorize that this whole station is filled with people who are a little gone. A little less balanced, so that Riggs does not seem that over the edge.
Well,
he goes to bed with a gun in his mouth. Yeah, sure, we all do that.
Here's the thing is that they worked closely with the LAPD for authenticity.
Oh no. That's telling. They're like, all right, true or false, you put a gun in your mouth every night, and they're all like, yeah.
Oh yeah,
true, of course.
We're all rampaging alcoholics that flirt with suicide.
Yeah, we're extremely racist. We cry in bed all the time. Yeah.
So his captain, the same day of this incident, refuses to even entertain the psychologist. No psych evaluation. He's not placed on desk duty or anything, which is pretty standard following any shooting, just so they can, make sure.
Don't do anything.
I could be a little bit wrong, but anytime you, even if it's an instance like this where it's like a bad guy with an Uzi is shooting at you and you shoot them and kill them, that's still paperwork and an investigation. Like, they have to make sure that,
Sure.
None of that happens.
You certainly don't allow the man to try to talk down a suicidal guy, not a few days later.
That's the next day. The same day Riggs shows up to work, shows up to an undercover bus drunk, kills three people, he is transferred over to homicide with Murtaugh. The same day. Pretty sure.
Yeah. And his presence is so jarring that Murtaugh thinks
It's the next day.
Oh, okay.
It's like 12 hours later.
Murtaugh thinks he's a goddamn criminal when he sees him.
Because Riggs has a habit of casually taking his gun out and playing with it.
Yes, which is inappropriate.
He's in the middle of the police station and he takes his gun out and just starts looking at it. Like, what are you doing? Like, what if it goes off, man?
Mm-hmm. That's what he's thinking about. He's just thinking about death.
He's just looking at his gun all the time.
He loves his gun. He loves his 80s gun. I love 80s guns.
Well, I mean, they make a big show of it. It's like it's a semi-automatic where Murtaugh's carrying a revolver. So it's like a John McClane gun.
Yeah, that's fair. Is after that the suicide scene? I do want to know. I should have noted this before. There's an arc in this about a band that I like. Because the bad guy, when we see the bad guy and he puts the lighter to Gary Busey, he's watching a band practice.
Yes.
Which is the least bad guy thing for a bad guy to do.
Yeah.
He's just watching some band practice, and it's like, watch, like, I don't know, watch Tigers fight or something, man. Why are you watching this shitty band practice? And then later, at the end of the film, we get to see the band finally, and they're playing. And I like the arc, because when the band's practicing, the guy's like, you guys are terrible. I could get a better band for half the price.
We gotta fill this club up.
Yeah, there's clearly, like, a conflict. Mm-hmm. And then later, the band's playing, and this is their big moment, and there's a shootout, and everybody runs.
But the club is full.
Yes. Oh, no, but it's just a tragic arc, because they clearly worked hard. They got their name out there. They practiced. They got the club full, and then it all goes to shit.
Right, and then a shirtless Riggs comes in and shoots three people.
Yep, and then they're fucking, band, I don't know. I don't know if their career's over. I like to think they broke up after that, because I wouldn't stay together.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, I don't know. We have bad choices in venues.
yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time a band has played at a venue where there was a shooting.
Yeah. But, like, this is like a mob venue. It's a
paramilitary drug conspiracy venue.
Yeah, I feel like they seem to be working for the club. Like, the club's just very mean to them. Like, if you book a band at a club, you're not like, all right, we want you to come here and play for us and practice ahead of time, and then we'll yell at you if we don't.
Yeah,
like
they seem to be part of the staff.
Yeah, like they're having
that's
exactly.
A house band.
Yeah. They just, I feel bad for their careers. I hope they figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
That band. I don't even know their name. We don't get to know their name.
No.
Yeah.
We can assume they're the band that contributed the song Lethal Weapon to the end credits.
Mm-hmm. We can assume.
yes. The first day that Riggs and Murtaugh are partnered together is when the suicide jumper happens. I don't think this would leave the news.
No, I don't think so either.
For several weeks, perhaps months.
Well, there's a few things. so he handcuffs himself to the guy, the jumper.
Well, they respond to the call of the jumper, and they show up, and Murtaugh's in charge of the scene. And he just sends Riggs up there. Like, Riggs is like, yeah, I'll go talk to him. He's like, do you have any experience with this? Nope. All right, go up there. Yep. So, like, Riggs is crazy, so we're like, all right. But, like, Murtaugh's, like, the elderly veteran family man who's, like, the ranking officer. He's in charge here. It's like, that's your decision, is to just send this guy who the only thing, like, he knows Riggs by reputation only, and the rumor around the police department is that Riggs is faking being crazy to collect a pension so that he can get...
Right.
Yeah. So he sends the guy that... As far as he believes pretends to be crazy, which is kind of what's the difference.
Right. Well, it's also one is like pretending is feels worse.
Yeah.
Because it makes him like a scumbag.
Yeah.
It makes him a criminal.
Yeah.
And so Murtaugh is just as guilty in the sense that he's just checked out.
Yeah. He doesn't
give a fuck.
No, he's retiring soon. It's his birthday.
Yeah.
He barely cares about investigating the murder of his friend's daughter.
Yeah.
He sends Riggs up there. You were saying he handcuffs himself to the jumper.
Yeah, and then I can't remember the exact dialogue, but he puts on a real gravelly Batman voice at him, and like it just acts, you know, completely unhinged.
Yeah.
And eventually jumps off with the jumper.
Yeah.
Into the little balloon they put down there.
Yeah.
That's pretty nuts. For me, the next scene is what's,
well,
the most troubling thing.
Yeah, I just a couple of points about this, but yes, the scene immediately following it is also a huge problem. But this, Riggs handcuffing himself to a jumper and then jumping off the building is several felonies.
Yeah, no, that's attempted murder.
Assault, attempted murder. Like, he's gonna Riggs is fired, probably going to jail. Murtaugh's going to get sued, possibly fired. The entire police department will probably get sued. The city of Los Angeles will probably get sued. Like, he has no experience in crisis negotiation, and he just goes up
and it shows
and basically tackles the guy off of the fucking building.
Yep. Yeah.
Police work.
Police. It's gritty police. This was that 80s thing where they treated like mental health problems like kind of a joke in these movies, where there'd be a jumper and people would be like sarcastic at them, or like,
right, they'd, yeah, be like, oh, your life's some, not like, so bad, you piece of shit.
Yeah, they'd be some stockbroker in a suit or something like that.
And it's it's weird because they don't treat Riggs's crisis as a joke.
No,
just this fucking guy.
Well, it's because it's again, it's kind of the perfect representation of cops.
Yeah,
I mean, this isn't meant to be like this is the same with I think people who work in hospitals and everything like that, is that you're dealing with crises all the time. So these people, I don't think they think of them as people, whereas the people in their personal lives,
yeah,
matter. So it's that. It's like, it's impersonal, where it's like this guy's going through probably the biggest emotional moment of his entire life.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody around him are just thinking about what they're going to have for lunch.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's like the ultimate exaggeration of that dynamic, where you fucking, yeah, you wuss.
As a person who has had the police respond to more than one of these types of crises in my life, this is not that far from the truth.
Right, because they just don't know how to deal with these situations to begin with.
Yeah, this is not...
Like, that's... All right, if you can think of Lethal Weapon as anything, I like to think that Shane Black wrote this movie as, like some sort of like perfect satire on the state of police, and no one interpreted it that way. Like, he was like, wait, that movie about police brutality I wrote, they turned it into a fun comedy? No, that wasn't it at all. Like, because you could make this same movie with the exact same events and make it like Training Day. Like, you could just make a dark, dark version of this and have literally the exact same things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Not change a thing.
Yeah, I've heard that Shane Black's original screenplay is substantially darker.
Right. Yeah, because this is dark.
In his original draft, I know the climax involved a tank loaded with cocaine that explodes and rains cocaine down over the Hollywood sign.
Oh, wow.
Want to see that movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I really want to make that happen.
I mean, we can do that.
Yeah, we just need the tank is the hard part, but the cocaine.
The cocaine and the Hollywood sign is just right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
I
want to
talk about
the next
scene. Because the next scene is Danny Glover yelling at him about how he's crazy or whatnot. And then they have this moment of like, he puts a gun to his head. He like shows him the bullet in this scene. He puts the gun to his head, and there's a lot of like, oh, you're so crazy. Do it. Do it, man. And like,
Murtaugh gives Riggs his gun and goads him into doing it.
Yes. And that's all well and good. The thing that I want to point out is this all takes place in front of an open window.
Yeah.
They go, he leads him into a store to be private, and then they have this big argument, and he points a gun, and outside there are just cops walking around. Yeah. Paramedics. Yep. And at any point someone could look through that window and be like, oh god, and like run in, because it's a hell of a display going on.
It truly is. And Riggs shoots himself in this scene.
Oh yeah.
I want to be very clear on that, because Danny Glover realizes that he's not some scumbag pretending, he is a guy that is on, that is, it's just hanging by the thinnest thread, and puts his finger in front of the hammer as Riggs pulls the trigger. Like, Riggs shoots himself in this scene. Like, had Danny Glover not done anything, Riggs would have killed himself in this scene.
Yeah. And then he's like, you really are.
And then they just continue their day.
Yeah, he goes to make a highway phone call.
Yeah.
Over the highway.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just keep going. Just
continue their day. They go to this house.
Right, and this is when I think Murtaugh starts like casually reminding Riggs, like, hey, no killing.
Yeah, don't kill anyone.
Yeah, which again, it's a frightening thing to have to casually remind.
Right, he still only really knows Riggs about his reputation, so that means that Riggs has killed far more than just the three men mere hours ago at that drug bust. They go to this house where they know that the Hunsaker's daughter had a connection. And they drive up to this private driveway in Beverly Hills, and this woman is leaving, and she's like, oh, go right on inside. So like, oh, and they kind of make a joke about it, because they were talking about how they were going to have to knock and be very polite to try to convince them to let them inside, because they don't have any kind of search warrant or anything. So they just are like, oh, okay, I guess we can just come right in.
That confused me, because I was like, did they call ahead?
No.
Because she's so casual. Everybody's so casual about it that I was like, oh, they're expected.
I think they, because we learned that this is merely like a packaging point for one like franchise, I guess, of this vast drug cartel conspiracy. Excuse me. So I think they're just used to people like these two guys showing up to pick up deliveries and whatnot, because we learn that it's like this, all the guys involved in this conspiracy are kind of like these middle-aged dudes who wear suits.
Right.
So she probably just
assumes
they're
all a bunch of Busey's.
Yeah. She probably just assumes she's one of like Busey's guys.
Yeah. It's not, it makes sense in retrospect, just the way the scene plays out.
Well, and it's...
you can't quite... Like, it takes a second to figure it out.
But the reason I'm exhaustively explaining that exchange is because they're not really... I don't think... But it seems like this would be a big legal snafu. I don't think they're actually allowed to be in this house.
Well, they didn't identify themselves.
At no point do they identify themselves. They just drive in.
Walk in.
And once they get inside, they like show their badges and whatnot. But it's like,
do they though? Because I thought they see the ladies packaging the cocaine.
They see
the
ladies packaging the heroin, and
then they get shot at like immediately.
Well, they show either Riggs or Murtaugh. I think it's Riggs. One of them raises their shirt so they can see their police badge on their belt.
Okay.
But that's the only time they identify themselves.
Right.
They don't when they
enter
the house. They don't when the guy, like when the guy shows up and starts shooting at them. Like, so basically they come into a private residence in Beverly Hills without identifying themselves. They shoot a man to death. He is shooting at them, but still.
Right, but they are trespassing.
Right, they're a place where they're not supposed to be. They kill a guy, and then they arrest these two women who are packaging heroin. And as far as the movie leads us to believe, they never question these two women.
Yeah. Also, they just hang out at the house afterwards.
Yeah, for a long time. Well, I mean,
and, like, do their laundry. Like, they hang out. Watch TV.
Yeah, they're just watching the game.
And just touch everything. Just touching all the stuff.
And
into the pool.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that's how that works, right?
I don't know.
I don't think if there's an investigation and they're the cops on the scene, they wouldn't just be like, so, I guess the TV's over there. Go on in and just sit and we'll get to you. Like, I don't think that's how that works. I think they would bring them into the station so they could do a report and, like, not use the dryer at the crime scene.
They don't write any reports.
Yeah, okay.
Riggs killed three guys yesterday.
Yeah.
He has killed a fourth today.
Right.
Like.
Right.
Riggs is a fucking problem.
Yeah. All the cops are a problem.
Yeah, yeah. that's not even like the most jarring thing about this is at the end of this scene, they're like, well, I guess case closed. Like, she was working for this guy. She saw something she wasn't supposed to. They poisoned her. She jumped. And then we killed this guy. Case closed. So that means they absolutely didn't question those two women they arrested.
No, they really didn't.
Because they would have at least heard that, no, this guy gives deliveries to this person. So they would have learned that this guy was like middle management by asking 5 minutes of questions.
No, they're doing bare minimum.
They are barely investigating.
And again,
this
crime. Danny Glover doing this for a friend.
For a friend. It's a girl he knew.
Yeah, this is
him the murder
giving
victim.
It his all.
Yeah. I'm sorry, a young woman he knew. She's like 23, but
right.
He knew her as a little girl.
Right.
So yeah, that's he's just watching the game on the couch at this house where they shot a guy.
Again, doing laundry. They're doing laundry.
Oh, man. Super cops.
It's very weird. What happens after this? Something explodes, right?
Yeah, they go.
Oh, no, they have dinner.
Yeah, they have dinner. The next day they go to this what was her name, Dixie? It was a prostitute that they had that Danny Glover Murtaugh briefly questions at the beginning because she's like, yeah, I saw her jump out of the window, and then they reason that actually she was in the apartment with the woman before she jumped and probably knows more about it, so they go to her house to question her some more, and then the house just explodes. Which,
yeah, that's a real Shane Black moment,
right? And it's like, this is not a critique against Riggs and Murtaugh's police work. I'm critiquing Gary Busey's criminal work here, because if you were killing the original witness by poisoning her drugs, so it you could at least make it look like an overdose or not murder. The next witness you kill, you blow up their house. Using an elite bomb. Like, Riggs looks at a fragment of the bomb as like, whoever built this is like a professional. This is like special forces military shit. So like, you gave away the whole game by blowing up a woman's entire house.
Right.
It's like, couldn't you like, I don't know, car accidented her? Like, accidented her somehow?
Yeah. I mean, they're really lucky that the bad guys are...
Right. Like, that was...
As insane as they are.
They played a huge hand right there.
Yeah.
Just blow it up.
Blow up this girl's house.
Blow up the fucking house. It's just in the middle of a neighborhood, too.
Oh, yeah.
And like,
again, very Shane Black.
He gets...
Like, he literally makes fun of this in Last Action Hero.
Yes, they do, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a joke in Last Action Hero.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so to the point where like Gary Busey gets identified by some neighborhood kids because they just do it in the open.
Right. And then they identify his tattoo, which again, very lucky of them because they would have had no leads.
I want to point out that neither Riggs nor Murtaugh even bothers to write down this kid's statement.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
As soon as he identifies the tattoo, they just walk away.
Yep.
Never go back to that kid. Don't tell any of the officers about this information. They don't tell any other cops about anything.
No, they don't. They don't. Yeah. They never check in.
It's like they're the only two police officers in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Like, because this turns out to be like a huge paramilitary cartel. It's like, guys, I think the National Guard needs to get involved at this point. Like,
oh, yeah. No, just them. Just the two of them.
Like, they have a helicopter.
Running on the street without shirts.
Sprinting down Hollywood Boulevard, firing a machine gun.
That's the thing. He shouldn't have just gotten fired in this. He should have been shot by the cops.
Yes, they both should have been.
Yeah. But before this, I think...
There's a few things before this, yeah.
The helicopter scene, which...
That's a hell of a thing.
Another very Shane Black moment, it turns out, because Iron Man 3...
I think it's the same location too. It's not. Oh, I don't think it's the same house because I don't think that house actually exists. But it's definitely this like seaside bluff mansion, like a you know, it looks a lot like Iron Man's house.
And they visit the sex man,
Sex Vortex Tom Atkins.
Yeah, he's drinking. He's casually drinking eggnog.
Yeah, he's just. I think it's like a wedding or a holiday party, right?
Yeah, but he's just drinking fucking party nog, like it's no big deal. Because he's like, yeah, I got to get this body all good and ready for the ladies.
Mm. I gotta drink this alcoholic milk.
Yep. No one sees the helicopter coming.
Nope.
It just shows up, despite like them being pretty loud.
Yeah, helicopters are notoriously noisy.
Yeah. And this is actually the moment where I realize they haven't talked to anybody else. Because after this, they kidnap...
Rianne. They kidnap Murtaugh's oldest daughter.
Yeah, and then they don't tell anybody. They just go meet them in the desert.
There's a couple of things there. This is like... They're talking to Hunsaker, sexual icon Tom Atkins.
Yep.
Because Murtaugh's figured out, like, oh, you knew about this, you're a part of this, and that's when Hunsaker
right.
tells them the whole deal about the organization and how they're like all Vietnam vets that just took over a heroin distribution point and have been running it ever since. Then the helicopter comes up and Gary Busey blasts Tom Atkins with a machine gun.
Yeah, this is the end of Tom Atkins.
Yeah, rest in paradise.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna be boning the angels now.
Yeah, gonna be boning the angels who are way too young for him.
Yeah.
It's going to bone those 25-year-old angels who are way too into him for some reason.
They can't get enough of him.
They can't get enough.
They can't get enough of his raw sexual magnetism.
Yeah.
So in this scene, it's like a party or a wedding or something. But there's people there. Rather than call anyone, rather than try to get any of this the other people who aren't already shot to death, like Tom Atkins, like out of harm's way from this helicopter. Like, you don't know who else they're going to shoot.
Right.
Riggs just sprints towards the helicopter and empties two of his clips.
He sure does.
He just shoots wildly at this helicopter as it flies away.
How hard is it to lose a, like, it's a helicopter, mm-hmm. and it flies away, and they're sort of like, well, that's it. Can't do anything about that.
Right. They never call anyone to be like, yo, there's this helicopter that just shot a guy. Can we figure out where it's going?
Surely we can track helicopters.
Yeah, they don't ever call anyone.
Yeah. I don't think... I think we can see where that helicopter's going.
You'd think. And also, even if Riggs had managed to hit the helicopter, like... what's the best case scenario? The helicopter crashes.
I think that in
his
mind
and perhaps explodes more people.
Yeah. I think that is the best case scenario. He's just like, I want to kill these people. They don't want answers. Nothing about them wants answers.
Oh, no.
They just want to go home.
In point of fact, they end this movie with no answers. That's
yeah, it's
something
true.
I really want to hit on when we get
yeah,
to
you're
that
right.
point. They do not solve this mystery.
No, they don't. No, there's no one. They don't pull it out at the roots or anything.
No,
here.
No, they kill all of the suspects and destroy all of the evidence.
Yes,
there's no there's no case. Like it's this mystery will forever like the murder of Hunsaker's daughter will forever remain unsolved because they have no evidence and no suspects, no testimony, right. Just the word of these two guys. Who yep. kills scores of people. Anyway, so the next, before Murtaugh's daughter gets kidnapped, they're out on the street questioning questioning prostitutes. I forget who, I think they're showing them pictures of Hunsaker's daughter. I can't remember exactly.
I think so.
But Gary Busey drives by and shotguns the ever-loving Christ out of Mel Gibson. Remember,
he
flies like 40 feet through a store window.
That as a shotgun will do to you.
Yeah, man. Mm, it's like a cannon.
Yep.
But it's okay because he was wearing a bulletproof vest. But
right.
but now they have the upper hand because they're like, well, they think Riggs is dead. We can use that to our
right.
advantage. So I'm like, is Riggs the only other cop?
I was about to say, they're cops, so they shouldn't even be thinking like this.
No!
This is why the bad guys make it personal, is because as far as the bad guys know, like, I'm not positive that, I guess they probably say it, but for all they know, the bad guys might not even know they're cops. Like,
that's entirely
because
possible.
Because nothing they do indicates that they're cops. They're not in uniform. They barely show their badge. They kill everyone. Mm-hmm. Like, they might just think they're rival gang members.
Right. From this point till the end of the movie, they do not attempt to arrest anyone.
The
only bad guy they attempt to arrest is the guy at the house. And they still shoot him to death.
Yeah, and nor do they attempt to get other cops involved.
Nope.
Because, again, it's a really weird... Like, the idea of kidnapping Murtaugh's daughter and being like, don't tell anyone. Like, that only works when it's not the cops. You know, when you're like, don't tell the cops. They're talking to cops.
Yeah.
So it's like, no, they're just going to get cops and they're going to handle this like cops would.
But they
they're going to take a grenade to the desert.
They don't do a thing. All they do, after Riggs gets shot, they get a call over the radio that there's been a murder, and Murtaugh's like, fuck you, I don't want to do this murder. Unless it's like some guy with blonde hair and dimples, and they're like, how did you know, sir? And it turns out it's one of the guys that Rianne was dating, one of the guys that Murtaugh's daughter was dating. They never investigate the murder of Rianne's boyfriend.
No, he just lets that one slide.
They immediately plan their ambush and go to the desert.
Yep. Again, they don't call any backup, no cops.
The only other cop that gets involved is the 80s man, because they call the station and the 80s man is like, oh yeah, Riggs was killed, and that's it. That's the only other cop that gets involved, and that's the limit of his involvement.
Here's a question. Do they ever even go to the house of the boyfriend who's got killed?
No.
Or is he just, do they call paramedics?
Nope.
They don't even,
do not investigate his murder.
No. They're just like, is the body still there? I guess the paramedics probably showed up.
I assume so.
But like, his mom's probably there. Like, someone had told her to wait up for a cop.
Mm-hmm.
And like, nothing. Just nothing.
Nope. No resolution. Never solved. Nope.
So the next day they're in the desert. And they just immediately, things go immediately bad.
It's just an ambush. Like, Riggs is just executing suspects. Right. With a sniper rifle from far away. That's all he's doing.
Yeah, they're off the grid at this point.
They are 100% off. They are vigilantes right now.
Yeah. No, Riggs even talks like Batman.
Yeah.
Did they bring the grenade?
Murtaugh brought a grenade.
Okay. He shouldn't have a grenade.
It's it's a smoke grenade, but yes.
Yeah. Right, it's a fake grenade.
Well, it's a smoke grenade.
It's a fake. It's a liar's grenade.
It is. So it's a fibber's bomb.
Yeah. And then Riggs gets taken in.
Mm-hmm. They all get captured.
Right.
Because of course they do.
Yeah, because they didn't bring any backup.
Right.
I like the torture scene with Riggs because he immediately tells him everything. Gary Busey.
Yeah, he really does. Yeah, Gary Busey's like, I got to know everything you know. He's like, we don't know anything.
Yeah. And then they still have to torture him.
And they don't because they haven't investigated a thing.
No, yeah. They have no idea what's going on. They're just rolling with stuff.
They just know who the bad guys are.
Yeah.
That's it.
They don't know what they want.
Nope.
Yeah.
It's like Gary Busey's like, we need to know if you guys know about where our next shipment is because we can't have it go down and have cops show up. And we never hear anything about a shipment.
Yeah. This is news to Ed. Yeah. To Riggs. Yeah, and again, he's just like, I don't know anything, blah, blah, blah. It's really funny because they still have the torture scene, so if you're going to write in a torture scene, you'd think you'd have your hero be like, fuck you. But instead, he just spills the beans.
I mean, there's nothing at stake.
No, there's nothing.
Anything.
Yeah, it's just funny how he's just like, I don't know anything, man.
I don't know shit, man.
And then they torture him anyway.
And he does have a fun... I mean, it is one of the better... It's a weird thing to say. It's one of the better torture scenes in a movie because of that element where he's like, I don't know. Like, he's just immediately like, I don't know anything. And then they bring out, I don't know the actor's name, but he played henchman in a lot of 80s movies. Like, he's in Die Hard as one of the henchmen. Yeah. He comes out with like this apparatus, this device. And Riggs is like, what the fuck is that?
Right.
And it's
they've clearly thought about this.
Yeah, he's electrocuting him.
Yeah, this is up there with like Casino Royale.
Yeah,
when it comes to
He does. The only thing that diminishes it is at the beginning of the scene, before it is even revealed that torture is going to happen, or like what the device is going to be, like how it's going to play out. Mel Gibson asks Gary Busey, who's the expletive? Like he said, he says, who's the, and it's a racial slur.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn, I missed that.
Oh yeah. It's like
Mel Gibson improv.
Right. It's like the very beginning of the scene.
Jesus.
He asks it like referring to the torturer henchman. Like it's just like, Jesus. Wow. That it's so we can assume like because he just that's the first thing on his mind. We know he's a Vietnam veteran, so it's like, man, he can't be too sympathetic towards like the Asian American community in Los Angeles. Like he really should be a police officer, maybe.
He really shouldn't be a police officer. I mean, he clearly Again, this feels like this movie is I feel like it's supposed to be an extremely dark look at police officers.
I think that was the original goal.
Yeah, and they just like turned it into like a buddy cop comedy.
It's weird to think because so many of, I mean, all of Shane Black's films are filled with a lot of comedy. Like they're all kind of dark comedies. But like from what I've read, Jeffrey Boehm added most of the humor.
Huh.
Like Shane Black's screenplay was like apparently very dark.
Yeah, he's like, this is fucking serious, you guys.
Yeah.
These cops are terrible.
They are the worst cops ever.
It's a problem, yeah. Yeah, and then
the juxtaposition with Murtaugh, I mean Riggs getting electrocuted, and then Murtaugh, they're just pummeling the hell out of him and rubbing salt in his wounds. But it's so funny because like Riggs is scream, like he drops a racial slur at the very top of the scene, and then he's like screaming like, I'm gonna fucking kill you both. And then they cut to Murtaugh, like the 50-year-old guy who's getting punched in the face over, and he tells them to go spit.
Yeah. So wholesome. So wholesome.
I mean, when they bring out Rianne, and then he's like, I'll fucking kill you. Right. But it's just funny in that first thing. He's like, go spit. Yeah. It's like, okay.
Damn. Whipping out the S word, Glover. Jesus.
So this is when Riggs uses his wiry little stork legs to strangle the torturer henchman and get himself free, and then he kills everyone, just literally everyone in the building.
Yeah, yeah. And then he's just running in the road like
they both are. They get out of this back room. It turns out it's like the back room of the club. So they come into the club as the band is performing on their big night, and Riggs immediately shoots a guy at the bar. Just because the guy is an armed guard.
Right.
We don't know if that guy is part of the cartel conspiracy, if he's just
doesn't matter.
Security for the club. Riggs shoots him dead instantly. And then another guy comes up to him and is like, hey! And Riggs shoots that guy like 4 times in the chest. Like, for all we know, that was another hired guard who saw what happened
or
and was like,
an undercover
hey!
Cop.
Or, yeah, we're undercover cop. We have no idea. This guy is. Riggs just kills him.
Yep.
They do not attempt to arrest anyone.
No. No, they forget they're cops.
Oh yeah, it's so beyond personal.
Yeah, and
now.
At this point, at like, any point, like when he's running through the streets with his shirt off.
He is running down Hollywood Boulevard firing
with
a machine gun.
Like it's the end of Fight Club. He's just screaming. Like at any point a beat cop could just shut that down.
A beat cop shows up.
Does he kill them?
No,
he
it's kill the most them. It's the it's one of the most unbelievable things in the film, unfortunately, is that Riggs sprints off down the street with his machine gun. It's just firing into traffic after Gary Busey. Murtaugh is stumbling to a car with Rianne. He has his revolver out. He's all beat up and bloodied. And a beat cop comes up to him and says, freeze. And Murtaugh's like, it's okay, I'm a cop. And he reaches into his pocket and pulls out a badge and shows the guy. And he's like, get her to safety. And the cop's immediately like, okay, Sergeant. And like grabs Rianne and takes her to safety.
Yeah, if I was that cop, I'd be like, that's a fake badge and you're under arrest.
Also, like given like, the current climate, like that cop would have shot Danny Glover.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
Just like instantly.
Yeah. I mean, again, I feel like both of these people would have been shot several times.
Definitely in that scene. Definitely Murtaugh, I mean, Riggs sprinting down the street like Bruce Jenner.
Right.
Just firing his machine gun. Like, he runs very fast in this film, but he also looks very silly when he runs. So it's just, he is flying down the street firing a machine gun.
Yeah.
Like an Olympian.
Right. This things went wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you know, your police investigation went wrong if you're missing a shirt and you're just firing a machine gun while running down the street. Like, things have your job. You're bad at your job at that point.
He intercepts Gary Busey at a freeway overpass, fires over the overpass into freeway traffic with his machine gun. And Gary Busey's car catches on fire.
Yep.
And then Murtaugh shoots this. The general's in a car with a driver, and they're driving out of the club at him. He shoots the driver. It goes careening into traffic on Hollywood Boulevard. It immediately gets T-boned by a bus, flips over, and explodes because there's grenades inside. So not only has he killed... First of all, he caused a major traffic accident. Second, this car explodes in the middle of the street, like a crowded street in downtown Los Angeles. Third, the car contained all of the drugs and the mastermind of this cartel conspiracy.
Right. So all the suspects and evidence have been incinerated.
Yes. The only suspect remaining is Gary Busey.
Yeah. And guess what happens with him?
Well, they deduce that they know that Gary Busey's probably going to Murtaugh's house because they know where he lives. There are cops staking out Murtaugh's house. They do not radio ahead to tell those cops to watch out for Gary Busey.
I don't think they remember they have a radio.
And we know they don't do this because Gary Busey shows up and they look at him and they're like, oh, you need to move along. Can we do anything to help you? And he just kills them both. So they
yes.
At no point did they ever bother to let these guys know, hey, a guy who looks like Gary Busey is coming to the house. He's got a gun and he's very dangerous.
You got a real Busey on your hands.
You got a rampaging Busey coming your way. So they just let these two cops get killed so they can set a wacky trap for him. And we know they got to the house first. It's not like Riggs and Murtaugh arrived too late to warn those cops because Gary Busey kills them. Then he goes inside and there's a note on the tree that says, sorry, bad guys, nobody here but us cops. So we know they got to the house before he did.
You're right. Oh, my God.
So they went in there. Those two cops die for the sake of their wacky trap.
So they could write a note.
Yes.
Yeah.
And get Murtaugh's family.
And then they ran
out
giggling. Yeah. They're like, what about those cops? And they're like, what does it matter?
Cops?
They all go to bed with a gun in their mouth every night. It's fine.
Yeah. It's like the murder victim in the beginning. Oh, she was poisoned anyway. She was going to die.
You're right. Yeah. Then they drive a goddamn car into the house.
Yep. Right through the house.
Are we at...
Which does result in them successfully arresting Gary Busey. They arrest him.
Well.
And then.
Okay. This is the dark twist. Is Mel Gibson wants to fight Gary Busey.
Yeah.
In like the rain, I want to say.
It's a burst fire hydrant.
Burst fire hydrant. And this is like the dark twist is that he's completely unhinged. He's like wants to fight this criminal and all the cops let it happen.
Yes.
And that's the darkest moment of this movie is they form a circle and they're like, yeah, we're going to let this guy beat Gary Busey to death. Or if he gets the upper hand, we're then just going to shoot this criminal that we have in custody.
Right. He is in custody, surrounded by dozens of cops. There is even a police helicopter circling overhead.
Yeah, he has no choice but to let this guy beat him.
Yeah,
or be killed.
Yep,
that's it. And both happens.
Both things happen. Yeah,
this is so disturbing of an idea.
Yeah, they have the only suspect in custody. The only suspect who can actually have any proof that solves any of the murders that happened,
right,
including the inciting death of the young woman, but instead they beat him in a fight club and then shoot him to death on Murtaugh's front lawn in full view of the entire neighborhood.
Yep. Everybody's watching this go down. This is dark.
And that's the end of the film.
That's the end of the film.
This, the murder of Amanda Hunsaker will forever be unsolved. Because they have no suspects. They destroyed all the evidence.
Yep, their final suspect. Man, did he bring out a pipe? Was there a pipe at one point?
He dislodged like a lawn lamp and was swinging it at Riggs, so they toss Riggs a police baton.
Right, they toss him a baton. Again, these are cops.
Yep.
These are all cops.
Mm-hmm. They're all just watching this happen, and Murtaugh's like, I'm responsible here. It's like, yeah, you're probably going to go to jail.
Yep. God.
And what I don't think they called them either. I think the neighborhood called those other cops.
Yeah, probably. They were like, this guy just drove his car through this house. There's clearly something's gone very wrong outside.
Yeah.
And then they're watching, the neighbors are watching, like, oh, good, the cops are here. What the fuck?
Yeah, wait, what's happening?
Are they forming
somebody?
A circle around these two guys? Are they fighting with pipes? What is this? It's, man, what an ending.
It's something. Oh, Gary Busey is wearing shiny white shoes, I want to point out.
Okay.
He's just wearing these fabulous white shoes in this fight scene.
Yeah. He died pretty.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
man,
oh my God,
terrible cops,
worst cops ever. Yep. And this is the most grounded of the films,
right? It's only gonna get worse from here.
Yeah, at least two of the other movies definitely end with Riggs and Murtaugh forgoing an arrest just so they can battle the villain,
right?
In Mortal Kombat.
They're such bad cops,
man. Such bad cops. But hey, he gets to have Christmas dinner with Murtaugh's family.
Yeah, that's good for him.
Yeah, good for Riggs. He's got a replacement family now.
Right. I mean, he should be in jail, but whatever.
They should both be in jail.
They should both be in jail. Their lives should rightfully be crumbling around them.
For all the reasons we described, these two men, at the very, very least, should be in jail.
Yes. At the very
least. At the very least.
Yeah.
So that's the 1987 action comedy thriller Lethal Weapon.
When's the sequel? What year's the sequel? Do you know?
89.
So we're skipping ahead to 89.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna see how that goes.
Yeah.
When does this series, it was well into the 90s, right?
Yeah, Lethal Weapon 3 came out in 93, I believe. And then Lethal Weapon 4 comes out in 1998. Oh, no, Lethal Weapon 3 was in 92.
Okay. Yeah, I think things get to be a real bummer by 4.
4 is a real, I mean...
Who is they? They start adding sidekicks. I remember that.
They add Joe Pesci in the next one.
Right, and that's great.
And they add Rene Russo in part 3. And then in part 4, they add Chris Rock.
That's it. I'm excited for Chris Rock to become a part of this Lethal Weapon family, even if it's not. I miss when Chris Rock was doing movies.
Yeah.
I want more. I've said this before. I want Bad Company 2.
Yeah, for sure.
With Anthony Hopkins and Chris Rock.
I mean, there's definitely a few moments in Lethal Weapon 4 where it's clearly like the movie just stops and Chris Rock just does part of his stand-up routine.
Yes. That's all the Chris Rock movies. Is that.
So
it's so weird that was a thing we just allowed.
I mean, it wasn't the only... I mean, he's not the only comedian that has been happened to.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, allowed in general, then. It's weird. With Chris Rock, it's like almost the most noticeable. Because they're like real non sequiturs when he does it. It's
yeah,
just like...
and his stand-up persona is a little bit... is different from his acting persona. So it's like he changes into a different person briefly to do his stand-up stuff.
It's very weird.
It's pretty funny.
I'm very curious to see how this movie... because like in the... I would say the current climate, but also the climate of like the 90s and LAPD... like watching this movie now, having not watched it in a while, I'm just like, I kind of mad at this movie because of the way it's like trying to heroically portray these cops who are terrible cops.
Terrible cops.
and they are a problem. And like the idea that there are cops who might have watched these movies and been like, yeah, I want to be a cop for these movies. It's like this, like
I watched these movies and wanted to be a cop.
Right.
So it's like, but it looks cute.
Exactly. The difference is you didn't become a cop.
No, I didn't.
Once you learned that it was like not this, like it's just like it's they're interesting movies for that reason, because it's just like, man, our culture was so messed up at the time with this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And like it's just funny how incredibly bad they are, and how it's sort of like supposed to be fun. And like I've sympathized more and more now with like the civilians and even the criminals.
To a degree, for sure.
To a degree. Because, well, it's that thing, it's like they're drug dealers, but they make them out to be like really over the top bad guys.
Yeah.
When like in reality it would be like some kid selling weed. And
oh, yeah.
Then some horrible cop shows up and like wants to fight him. Like it's just yeah, these movies are very fascinating to watch now. Because I don't think, to an extent, they do not stand the test of time for that reason. So I'm interested to see how it gets into the 90s and how they handle that. Because I feel like the 90s things changed a bit.
A little. The movies,
yeah.
The second one is still pretty serious, but definitely they become more screwball. Like they become comedies almost.
Right.
By the time the fourth one rolls around.
Right. They have to get less dark.
Yeah.
They either have to be less dark or they have to be less funny about it. They have to choose one or the other. Because I think they realized, like, I don't think people are that happy about cops, like, as they were in the 80s. I don't know how happy people were about cops in the 80s either.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think these movies are a good example of that. I mean, it's a storytelling device. It's like, well, if you want to have a good guy character characters at the center of this like crime mystery, it makes the most sense to make them cops, because, well, who would be the good
right.
guy involved in this? But it's like they're cops in like name only. They don't behave like police officers. They don't behave like they have any rules.
Right. But not just them; it's the entire LAPD.
Right, everyone
it's
around
the
them.
Cops.
In the
entire
movies.
This is a dystopian future.
Yeah,
like, or not future, I guess, but it's a dystopian portrayal of police in Los Angeles, and it might be kind of not too far off.
Yeah,
and that's why it's like watching this when all the cops form a circle at the end.
Yeah.
It's just like. This is fucking
just
dark.
Just beating a guy in custody who
yeah.
is their only suspect and
right.
only possible source of actually solving the case and closing it.
Yeah.
And then they just shoot him. And then they shoot him.
They shoot a man in custody.
Yep.
After beating him. Good God.
Yep. Because he pulls another
lethal
cop's gun.
Weapon. What
the fuck was that guy's problem?
Well, that's the trope, because they always, this is that thing with especially 80s movies, they always need to find like a straw man reason
right.
to kill.
Right.
Because it was always like,
yeah.
No, it was like they didn't think audiences would accept that we could just arrest these people. They had to be exterminated.
Right.
So it was always like at the last minute they go, and pull out a gun, and they're like, he's got a gun.
Yeah.
And then they shoot him even though he's in custody.
Yeah.
And they're like, whew. And they act like, well, we didn't want to do that, but he drew a gun.
Well, it's
like, well, you're the writer. You wanted to do that.
Yeah. It's the trope, like where it's like,
yeah.
I'm not going to kill you. And like Riggs even says, it's not worth it, and gets up and is walking away. But
right.
it's like, well, I mean, it's just to make us feel better about them killing this person.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite version of that trope is, of course, Alan Alda in classic film Murder at 1600, where he plays like a politician and he's getting arrested. And, you know, like he's not going to go to jail for a while. Like he's a rich old white guy.
Yeah,
he'll be fine. And he grabs a gun and they're like, he's got a gun, and they have to blow Alan Alda. And it's like, that's the most alien thing I've ever seen
just,
in my life.
Just blasting Alan Alda.
Yeah. Dangerous-ass Alan
dangerous
Alda.
Dangerous criminal Alan Alda.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, I think that's the end of this first episode.
Yeah. A special thanks to John Ryman for making this happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get three more of these. Yeah, so
we're gonna get deep into the lethals.
Yeah, and as you know, we also have another miniseries going on right now, also Patreon subscribed, called Fear Worms.
Oh yeah.
So check out, the first episode's out and the second episode should be out soon.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm not gonna reveal what it is, but we'll have
a third one
miniseries.
You guys,
we have three miniseries coming out.
You guys have been so awesome about heading over, supporting us on the Patreon and giving us these miniseries to do for you. It's been great.
Yeah, if you wanna check out our Patreon, it's patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We have exclusive podcasts like Tom and Jeff Watch Batman and Fox Mulder is a Maniac.
Mm.
Check all that shit out.
Yeah. Maybe get in on this if you want us to do a full miniseries or just your own We Just Watched episode. I don't care.
That's the thing about this specific tier is that these people are choosing to have them released, but you could literally just have it so you could listen to it yourself.
Mm-hmm. And it can be about literally anything. It doesn't have to be about movies.
No, this tier is producing a podcast. And you could be like, I want to put this in a box and bury it if you wanted to.
And you can do that.
Yeah, you could do that. You could put it up your butt. Put it in a flash drive. Put it right up your butt.
Slide it right on up there.
Yep.
Mail it to Tom Atkins.
Yeah, mail it to Tom Atkins. He'll do, I don't know what he'll do with it.
Sexual bog monster, Tom Atkins.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I think that's enough.
All right.
I think we can get out of here. Well,
take it easy, everyone.
Yeah, enjoy 1987 crime film.
Sure.
Solving. I don't know. Let's stop now.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.